is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSiN Studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. We say hello to our friends watching over on Samsung TV Plus, where you can enjoy and get the viewing pleasure of the Lombardi Line. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Michael, a fun college football Saturday on deck. Yeah. How are we doing this morning?
We're doing great. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Starts early, too. Alabama's in the 12 o'clock window. It's going to start early there. I mean, our Washington State Cougars play Arizona. That'll be a fun game to watch for me later. And then, you know, you've got your you got the Big Ten final matchup. Pac-12 final matchup there up in the Pacific Northwest. I don't think people realize. When I did McAfee's show yesterday, and before I came on, Herb Street was talking about with Pat about, you know, the history of Washington. But I don't think people realize, you do because you grew up there, what a historic program the University of Washington is. I mean, when I was Sonny Six Killer and Don James, and this was an incredible program that kind of has gone a little bit south and has, but now I think with the board, it's going to continue to come back, and it has national championship ability there. There's no question.
Yeah, there's been peaks and valleys for the Washington Husky program, and we'll get into all of that when we break down their game. College Game Day is in Seattle, so it's been cool to kind of see all those shots along Lake Washington, the greatest setting, Husky Stadium, and all that stuff. But Oregon-Washington is the big game of the day, and we'll get into that. But first, let's set the table for what we do have coming up here over these next couple of hours. 15 minutes from now, our buddy Tim Murray, host of VSiN Primetime and the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast, will join us to give out his college football card. Tim, always with interesting plays, always got some dogs on the card here, so we'll get Tim's thoughts on the college football slate. Then 30 minutes from now, our friend Stormy Bonantoni, who you see Sunday through Thursday here on the Lombardi Line, she will be doing the Florida Atlantic and South Florida game later on this afternoon. So Stormy will be joining us from the Tampa area. We'll get Stormy's thoughts on the college football slate and also the NFL slate as well. And then in the second hour, 11:15 Eastern, Bucky Brooks, former player, now analyst over at NFL Network and Fox Sports. We'll talk about some of these quarterbacks here, because there's a lot of hype about these quarterback prospects in college football right now and what that could mean for these NFL teams and spinning it forward to the NFL draft, sort of setting the table for what could be a really, really fun class. And then at 11:30 Eastern, Matt Youmans will join us for a couple segments in studio, host of VSiN Tonight and the co-host of the College Football Betting Podcast, give out his college football card and his NFL card. But before we talk about today's game in Seattle, I wanted to talk a little bit about what we saw last night in Boulder. What a game. Colorado up 29-0 at halftime against Stanford. There were 13-point favorites. We all thought that this was status quo, everything going according to plan. And then the second half happens, and Stanford absolutely shocks the Buffaloes, winning 46-43 in double overtime. Stanford had a kid at wide receiver. This Elik Iomanor had 294 receiving yards, three touchdowns. I mean, just an incredible win for Stanford and an incredible collapse for Colorado.
Iomanor had a coming out party. He's a redshirt freshman. He went to high school in Deerfield Academy up at UMass. He was a top 10 recruit, and he's a redshirt freshman. And he was like, okay, I'm big time. I'm showing everybody. And when he ran away from the whole Colorado team on the slant for what it was, 95 yards, and no one could catch him, it was like, got it. Like, you're going to get doubled every single play from here on if I'm the defensive coordinator. Impressive. You know, and look, I think Troy Taylor's done a great job. I watched him play against Arizona. It was a lot closer game than I thought it was going to be. His team was well coached. They're not overly talented. But Iomanor is incredible. I mean, he was sensational. The catch he makes in the end zone off the top of a head. I mean, this guy's got three more years. And, you know, you can just, as Belichick would often say, just put him up on the pro board because he's going to be playing pro football. I mean, you know, he's got a lot. I mean, that was an incredible performance by him. And a tribute to the, I think David Shaw recruited him there because he is a redshirt freshman. So, and he stayed because he's obviously, he's going to be a doctor, and he's got, he majors in medicine. And so he's going to go forward, but impressive, really impressive.
Yeah. He was like, I had never heard of him before. Like, I watched Stanford play Hawaii in week zero, and I didn't really see him throw the football to him. So I was watching the game last night. I was like, good God, this guy is real good. And he was going up against Travis Hunter, who a lot of people think is one of the best cornerbacks in the country. Yeah. And he just went ahead and took his lunch. And once again, 13 catches, 294 yards, 3 touchdowns. At one point last night for the in-game bettors, I believe Stanford, and I don't know what the exact number was. I saw a bunch of different numbers that were thrown out on social media when I was trying to play catch up a little bit. And I saw that I think they were 40-1 at one point in-game to win the game live. So if anybody sprinkled a little bit on the tree, they're having a fun weekend here on this Saturday because, man, like they were down 29-0, largest comeback win in school history, and they do it on a pretty big stage.
You know, and I think there's a couple lessons to learn, right? I say this all the time. You go in at halftime, you got to figure out how many points you need to win the game, and you got to take the second half, not that you're ahead, that you're tied, and how many points more do you need to score to win the game, which Stanford, you know, they still kind of play pace. The second thing is you know, for Stanford, you know, you're chasing those points, trying to get two, and the game, you could have won the game on the field goal at the end of the game because the score was to you. You would have been tied if you just kick extra points. You scored 5 touchdowns in the second half. Mm-hmm. You would have done it. So credit them. A really resilient win. And look, we know this. Colorado, Hunter's playing both ways. I don't know if you can ding him for not being able to cover the receiver late in the game because, I mean, the kid's got to be exhausted. Right. Yeah. And it shows you the lack of depth that Colorado has on their team. But they're coming. You know, Sanders misses that critical 3rd and 4 that would have kept the chains moving. They had a punt on that. And that led to the final drive to kick the field goal to get it to overtime. So when you're up by 10 with 5 minutes to go in the game, you've got to win that game with your offense. You got to be able to convert those downs so the defense doesn't have to come back on the field. Obviously, Colorado didn't do that.
Yeah, tough loss for Colorado there, trying to become bowl eligible. They still need 2 more wins to go ahead and do that. When you look at the schedule, it's going to be a difficult road for the Buffaloes, but we know upsets can happen in college football, but right now they have a lot of work to do heading into the bye week, and this is a team that really needs a bye week. Like you could see it watching them in that second half. They need a bye week in the worst way, and unfortunately for them, it comes now at a time where they give up a 29-point lead, so it's going to be a long couple of weeks before we see Colorado once again on the field. All right, let's talk about the games that we're going to see today. Starting in Seattle, Oregon at Washington, a top 10 showdown. College game day is there. And right now with the spread, we're seeing the Huskies are 3-point favorites, but at some shops, 3.5-point favorites. Total has ticked down just a half point from 67 to 66.5. But what are kind of your early thoughts here on the border war in Seattle?
Well, look, I'm a big Kalen DeBoer fan. I was a fan of his when he was at Indiana. I think people forget that when Penix was at Indiana, he was great. Mm-hmm. And when DeBoer left, all of a sudden, it wasn't the same thing for Penix. He got hurt. He wasn't as sharp. And then he transferred to Washington. And then all of a sudden, you know, reunited with DeBoer and things kind of changed for him. So I like Washington. I think Oregon's front is really good. I think they're tough to handle. You know, I think it's going to be a challenge for them to move the football because Oregon is – we saw this against Colorado. They're able to take the line of scrimmage. They're the 9th best defense in college football. They're the best defense in the Pac-12 in terms of college football. You know, they're able to play their pass. I mean, they're one of the best pass defenses in the country. They're 8th overall. And every number in terms of where they are, relative scoring, all those things in Oregon's defense is in the top 5 in the conference and in the country. The only thing you can do on them is really run the football. So, I think it'll be a great game. I think it's going to come down to the in-game coaching, in-game decisions. I like Penix over Nix. I know you love Nix to be the Heisman, and I think a lot of that's going to go to it. But I thought Penix, when I watched Washington play and I've watched Oregon play, I just think they're slightly a little bit better. I think the line says that, and I think it'll be a fun game to watch.
Yeah, Penix definitely has the edge at quarterback, in my opinion, having watched these two teams closely this season here. And this, to me, feels like this is going to come down to the fourth quarter. Like, I know that's cliche to say, but when you have two really good teams, two good coaching staffs, typically it does. And in a fourth quarter close game, I would lean to the side of Michael Penix taking care of the football versus Bo Nix, even though I have the Bo Nix ticket. And the Bo Nix ticket, the big reason for that was a game like this, a chance to have the showcase, a chance to have that opportunity on a national stage for everybody to go ahead and see you. But I think that Washington, like, I don't know if I would lay the 3 just because I think Oregon might be the more complete team, but with home field advantage, and we know about some of the road splits for our friend Bo Nix there, like, I think that I would trust Michael Penix more in a close game in the fourth quarter where decisions have to be made than I would Bo Nix.
Yeah. Look, I think both coaches, you know, have done a great job. But when you watch this team and you see how they perform and, you know, they're able to score points at will, really. And, you know, look, when you average 569 yards of offense per game like Washington does and you score 46 points a game, you know, it's pretty impressive. And the scheme's really good. I mean, Oregon struggled against Tech in week two. I think you can make the case that Tech could have won that game, right? Mm-hmm. And now the last 2 weeks, there have been no struggle whatsoever. They've outscored their opponent 84-12, beating Stanford and Colorado, two teams that went into and both of them and beat them by the exact same score. Beat Colorado 42-6, beat Stanford 42-6. Kind of if you play that out, do you wonder why it was an overtime game?
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe taking the points at Stanford was the ideal thing, that there were 13-point underdogs in that game here. What do you make of the total, though? Because it's ticked down a little bit, 67.5, I believe, was some of the numbers. Now we're down to 66.5 and even see a 66 out there as well. Like, do you see this being maybe a slower start? I know these offenses are really efficient and they can put up points, but maybe it's a little bit of a slower start with all the energy and the anxiety here with this game?
You know, I think in these games, coaches, the good coaches, the smart coaches, they've got to pace the game. They can't, you know, you don't want to get into a track meet with another team that can play with a track meet. I think mm-hmm. pace is really important. And I think last night we learned that. I mean, if Colorado State plays with a better pace with the ball instead of, you know, everybody wants to play tempo, right? Everybody wants to play tempo. And yet in reality, sometimes you've got to play the conditions that present itself at the game, mm-hmm. right? You know, to me, as I often say, analytics doesn't know who's on the field. That's one. And two, the data is predicated on the past, not the present. So what's happening in the game really matters. I think that's important.
Yeah. Playing tempo. How about we play to win the game? How about that? That'll be a lot of fun. We'll see who Tim Murray likes to win these games coming up here on the other side of the Lombardi Line.
Former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network here on this Saturday in October. Femi Abebefe out here in downtown Las Vegas, Michael Lombardi in the great state of New Jersey. Fun first hour. We have a fun second hour on deck for you guys as well. 15 minutes from now, Bucky Brooks over at the NFL Network and Fox Sports. He will join us mm-hmm. to break down the quarterback prospects that we will see today in college football and kind of spinning it forward towards the NFL draft, which will be littered with quarterbacks in the first round. Then 30 minutes from now, our friend Matt Eumanns, host of VSiN Tonight and the co-host of the College Football Betting Podcast, will give us his college football and NFL card, as he always does each and every Saturday to wrap up the show. But Michael, before we get to your Lombardi look ahead, let's talk about what you wrote about here on VSiN.com. Mm-hmm. We encourage everybody to go ahead and read it at VSiN.com. It's your look ahead that you do each and every week, but also a takeaway from what you've seen in the league. And this one has to do with the Denver Broncos and Russell Wilson, their high-priced quarterback. This has been an utter disaster since the trade a year ago. Last year was awful. This year, it seems like it's even worse. Maybe not his play, but the way the team is playing as a whole is worse as they sit here at 1-5. And one thing that really jumped out to me in your column is the last line that you wrote here in this paragraph, where you said, you can honestly say without 1 ounce of hesitation, the next 11 games are the last games Broncos fans will see Wilson in their uniform. What do you think is next for both the Broncos and Russell Wilson?
Well, you know, I'm not a clairvoyant, nor can I predict the future, but I can look at contract, you know, and I can look at contracts and I can look at the reality of a contract, right? And so the way teams have done contracts in the NFL, because of the funding rules, I don't think fans understand this. So what happens is when Deshaun Watson got this fully guaranteed contract, after March of the year he signed the contract, the Jimmy Haslam's family had to send the league office a check for every dollar that was guaranteed to Watson in the future. It's a huge number, right? Mm-hmm. So you're going to have to write a check for $120 million, let's say. I mean, that takes away, no matter how rich you are, that takes away from your cash flow. So because of the rules that were started in the 60s, because back then, nobody was sure the owners could afford to pay the guaranteed contract. So the league instituted a rule that said you have to send money to the league if you guarantee behind a certain date. Okay, that's the backdrop. So what the way teams have maneuvered around that is they've said, okay, we'll guarantee your contract for injury, But when you get to a certain trigger date, we'll hit it for skill and injury, and now we don't have to fund it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what happened last year when Sean took over, that contract in 2024, in 2023, was fully guaranteed, right? It was, he had signing bonus and prorated bonus, all that. Now, in 2024, his contract is fully guaranteed at $17 million. He can't get away from it. They could cut him, but they're paying Russell $17 million. If he's on the roster for the fifth day of the league year in next March, whether it's March 10th, whether it's March 15th, whether it's March 34th, I don't know what day it'll be, March 30th. I don't know. Whatever the league year starts 5 days later, mm-hmm. then his $37 million in 2025 become fully guaranteed. Now, let me ask you, Femi, would you be willing to guarantee $37 million in 2025 for Russell Wilson if he's on your roster in 2024 on the fifth day?
No, not with the way things are going in Denver. I would not.
There's no chance. There's zero chance. There's less than a zero chance. Now, what you could do, what they could do, is they could go to Russell and say, look, we don't want to guarantee 37. So will you be willing to write the language differently so that the guarantees don't get triggered? What leverage does Russell have? He probably doesn't have any. They could rearrange the contract. They could rearrange the contract. But if they rearrange the contract, whatever he gets rearranged to, he's the starting quarterback at 37 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Is that where you want to go? I don't think so. So I think they have to split next year, eat the $17 million, and start over.
Mm. So it'd be the $17 million base salary. I'm looking right now here for 2024. If they were to release him prior to the June 1 release date, it would be a dead cap of $85 million.
Can't do it.
Like that is just unreal. So you think that they would just go ahead and would this be a post June 1 cut? Would this would be for Russell Wilson, or like how would they kind of maneuver around this? Because it feels like this is
going to be June 1. They still eat $48 million. I think it is right. They still are in problems. I mean, look, it's the contract. It not only is the trade horrendous, the contract is horrendous squared.
Yeah.
And so there's really no relief in the contract that you're just going to have to bite the bullet and take it.
Mm.
And you're going to have to rip the Band-Aid off. It's going to hurt, but you're going to have to do it.
Man, yeah, that's definitely going to hurt. And I don't know how if they were to do this and hit on one of these rookie quarterbacks, whatever that's playing college football right now, then maybe you can kind of counterbalance it. But boy, they're going to be strapped for cash. And they do have guys who are coming up. I mean, Jerry Jeudy, he wants a contract. We can get into that. Patrick Surtain is going to get a contract by someone eventually, one of the best young corners in the league. He's eligible for an extension. Like, how do you maneuver sort of paying some of these younger guys after making a move like this to where you were pretty much going to bomb your salary cap to go ahead and move on from a mistake that you made?
You clear the deck. They're not going to sign Jeudy. I mean, they're not signing. They'll trade you Jeudy if you want them. They're not signing Jeudy. The only guy they're going to sign is Surtain. They'll trade Cortland Sutton. They'll trade anybody. They'll trade Garrett Bolt. They'll do anything. You got to tear it down. That's the point. This contract forced a tear down. This contract has forced a tear down. And as I wrote about, if you look at their team, their one loss record over since 15, they went to the Super Bowl and won it. Since that time, you know, when Manning left, they've been searching for the future quarterback, and they haven't won any games. They haven't won any games. They haven't been very good. And they were too late to recognize they needed to rebuild. And when they rebuild, they brought in George Payton to give him the keys to the kingdom. And he's left them in a deeper mess than he was before he got there. Elway created a mess, but George made it worse with this contract and this act of desperation. So it's not good. And I don't care what anybody says. You know, Sean's not going to say we're going to cut Russell Wilson because he's got to play him for the next 11 games.
Yeah.
But trust me, in January, trust me on this. In January, tunes will change. We'll go from A minor to a B key. You know, it's going to change completely because I'm not making this up. You can't get away. Now, if Russell says, okay, I won't take the guarantee on the 37. I'll just go and if you pay me. Well, what's the number? What is he worth? Would you pay him 20? I wouldn't. You need another quarterback. If you pay him anything, you still need another quarterback.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait for the week 17 or week 18 Sunday news dump where we see the insiders start tweeting out how uncertainty around Russell Wilson's future in the Rocky Mountains. I can't wait for that one coming up later on down the line here this season. But George Payton, though, you brought up an interesting point because Payton got them in a deeper of a mess. Does he get to see this thing through, or do you think that we end up seeing a new general manager around this time next year?
Well, Sean Payton's the general manager. They already have taken Payton's authority away from when they hired Sean. Mm-hmm. What we'll see is if he can get Jeff Ireland out of New Orleans, which everybody in the league thought Jeff Ireland was headed to Denver in the offseason, which didn't happen. Or Ryan Pace, the former Bears general manager, could be going there. Sean's going to get somebody he's comfortable with that can run the personnel department. And I think that's where they could be headed. I mean, George has been basically neutralized. He's really just, we had a Troy on, I forget his last name. He was a great, he knew the Denver team really well. Yep, he knew it really well. And he just basically said that George is basically a college scouting director right now, and that's what he's operating on. But, you know, he's looking at this mess he created. I mean, this has got his fingerprints all over it. Now, Sean hasn't made it any better. You know, with the money he spent on McGlinchey and Zach Allen and some of these guys he brought in free agency, Frank Clark, I mean, it's really kind of comical how bad it has been. I mean, when you look at, like, Frank Clark, let's just take Frank Clark. This is how bad it was. Frank Clark got $1.5 million to sign. His $3.5 million salary was fully guaranteed. And he has a $510,000 per game roster bonuses. And he's got another $2 million in sacks and playtime. So he could earn up to $7.5 million. Now, he was so desperate to get out of there. He took a reduction down to 1.1 in his salary, which is the minimum he's going to do. He eliminated his per game rosters. And he eliminated the sack and play time. So he's like, okay, if anybody wants me, I'm out. He gave up $2 million to get out of there. That's how bad it is.
Times are tough. Real quick, let's get to the Lombardi look ahead, though. The two plays, not one, you have two of them that you're staying away from a betting standpoint, one in college, one in NFL.
Yeah, the SC Notre Dame game, I don't understand. I mean, I don't trust Lincoln Riley. I don't trust any of that. And then, you know, and then the pro game, you know, I can't. I'm not touching. I don't think, and just being brutally honest here, I don't think the Patriots have hit the bottom yet. I really don't. I think they're just not good enough. They have no confidence. The way this game has to go for them is their defense, much like what happened with the Jets, their defense is going to have to win the game, they'll make a few plays. I think it's going to be really challenging. So that's the one that I would.
USC, Notre Dame, and Patriots, Raiders, those are the Hall & Oates plays of the week. I had to get that in there. Line of the week, you're going to the AFC South.
Well, look, you know, there was a stat put out. I forget who put it out online, but essentially whenever teams go to London and they come back in the fourth quarter, I think it's 12 instances in the fourth quarter, they're either behind or ahead by a point that they tend to fade on the return. We saw that last week with Atlanta. Most people were on Houston in that game and Atlanta kicked a field goal to win and it depended on what you got Atlanta, you won. This week it's the Jags. And I think the Colts at 4 are a good play because I think the Jags will suffer. We'll have some of that lasting effect. Because remember, the first time they played, the Jags won by 10, but the Colts were on the one-yard line to try to score, and they couldn't do it.
Yeah, and they spent 2 weeks over there, now back in the States. Bucky Brooks of NFL Network and Fox Sports joins us next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network here on this College Football Saturday. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi hanging out here on October 14th. Michael out in the great city of New Jersey. I'm here in downtown Las Vegas. And joining us now to sort of set the stage and watch these college football games from more of an evaluation standpoint for the NFL, we're bringing in our guy, Bucky Brooks, over at the NFL Network and Fox Sports, played in the NFL as well. Bucky, we appreciate you joining us here on the Lombardi Line. Bucky, you joined us during the draft process. So this is kind of a chance to sort of set the stage. And from the untrained eye, Caleb Williams looks like the absolute real deal. USC is playing Notre Dame coming up later on this evening. Is Caleb Williams as good as he is advertised?
I mean, he's a really good player. And I think when you're looking at franchise quarterbacks, the one thing that real franchise quarterbacks can do is they can always make the play caller right. Through their ability to either execute the script or execute off the script, they have the ability to make every play right with their natural talent. Caleb Williams has that. Now, I would say his best moments not only happen when he's in rhythm, but when he escapes the pocket, he has enough athleticism to run it if he wants to run, but he runs with his eyes down the field to make big plays. And when you look at this SC team, I mean, I know they're getting talked about being a team that could be in the playoff. The only reason they're in that conversation is because of him. And so to me, when you have a player like that that can elevate the team, that's when you begin to look at the traits and the gifts and that extra stuff and say, oh, yeah, he can be a franchise quarterback at the next level.
Yeah, I think you captured it perfectly. I mean, because he's making everybody else better. And I'm not sure that this ST team is as good as everybody thinks. I think the fact that they're a dog to Notre Dame on the road proves that. How about Drake May? Is he the number two guy, or is there someone else? Is it Michael Penix? I know we have a lot of work to do in this draft, but I do think there's a lot of teams that know this is a great quarterback draft. And, you know, that's why there may be some hesitation in trying to trade for Kirk Cousins, because you give up the chance at one of these guys. Who's your second best quarterback if Caleb's one?
So here's the funny thing. Like, so Drake May is near and dear to my heart because I'm a Tar Heel. He's playing under my former coach, Mac Brown. And I know his dad really well. When I was at Carolina, his dad had just played at Carolina as a quarterback, was a big time three sport athlete in North Carolina. So that's part of the pedigree. Drake May is a prototypical franchise quarterback that everyone has looked for the last 30 years. He's 6'3", 6'4". He can play it from the pocket. He's athletic. He can get on the edge. I've talked about his family history because his brothers have played high-level basketball and baseball in college. So this is a kid who gets it. But the thing that people will appreciate about him, he's all business when it comes to playing the game. He's a yes-sir, no-sir kid. He's serious about his preparation and process. And even though I would say he's only played football in college for 2 years, because remember, he didn't play his last season in high school due to COVID. He redshirted didn't play behind Sam Howell. So he's only played a year and a half. So his best football is ahead. But all the things that you look for, not only physically, but the intangible traits, he has it. And there's going to be some conversation depending on who's the number one, who gets the number one pick. There will be more conversation about Caleb Williams versus Drake May than just Caleb Williams and then everybody else.
Wow.
No, bingo. He nailed it. He nailed it, Femi. He nailed it. That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's a strong
I think everybody
evaluation.
Just assumed Caleb is going to be the number one, but I think Bucky nailed it, because the more you dig into the personality of Drake May, the more teams are going to gravitate. Not that Caleb Williams' personality isn't great, but this kid's got some unique skills that few have.
I think that's excellent insight, because I think most people think that is, can Drake May protect his QB2 spot? But that sounds like he's really in the conversation for QB1 between he and Caleb Williams. We're speaking with Bucky Brooks, former NFL player, now analyst over at NFL Network and Fox Sports. Well, if we talked about May and Williams, those are the top two guys. It appears like, at least as of right now here in October, still a long way to go until we get to the draft process. How about the Pac-12 showdown in Seattle today? Michael Penix, Bo Nix, both those guys have seen themselves kind of rise up the ranks over the last year. So where are you at with Michael Penix, the Washington quarterback?
Hey, I really like Michael Penix. I really love him. I had a chance to meet him and talk to him a lot this summer. And I think what we're seeing, and some of this is going to be the Brock Purdy effect, you're seeing these older quarterbacks that come into the National Football League, Brock Purdy, Aiden O'Connell, guys that played a lot, they have advantages over the other young guys that come in. Michael Penix will fall into that category. You have to remember, he played at Indiana before he goes to UW. He suffered a series of injuries. But all of that bought him time to be around the college game. This is a real mature player, really smart. He's learned how to not lean as much on his athleticism and become a guy that can deal from the pocket. When you think about him, because he talked about the relationship that he has with the head coach there who was with him, I think, at Indiana. Mm-hmm. That's why he ended up there. He really has a high IQ. He has good instincts and awareness. He's a really good player. And you see him on the big stage at UW. He plays, and he plays at a high level. This is a great showcase game for him and also Bo Nix. But I'm really excited about Michael Penix, because I was kind of on that line, like maybe he's a franchise guy. Maybe he's like that second rounder that develops into it. I think he's firmly in the conversation as a guy that can be a frontline starter in the league.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, he's done it all. And I think DeBoard has really, those two, that partnership from Indiana, because when he didn't have DeBoard at Indiana, he wasn't the same player. But you can see how the system meets the talent. So, Bucky, going back over the last year's draft, I mean, everybody's down on Bryce Young. He's getting killed. I actually think Bryce Young looks really good. I don't think he gets a lot of help from his offensive line. C.J. Stroud has looked sensational. What are your thoughts of the young quarterback so far this year?
So it's funny because I had a chance to coach Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud together at a team at an event like Elite 11. And I would say this, Bryce Young has always been the ballyhoo guy. C.J. Stroud has always kind of flown under the radar, but he's the guy that's really, really, he kind of has the tools and the it stuff, right? So people see him deal from the pocket. He has all that natural talent and he can throw it. And, you know, he didn't want to leave the pocket much at Ohio State, but the athleticism is there. I think the most impressive part is C.J. Stroud that we're seeing is a guy that we always talk about the quarterback making it better. Where I do the sideline reports for the Jacksonville Jaguars. So that game, the second game of the year, he's down four offensive linemen. I don't know who he's throwing to on the perimeter, but yet he leads them to a win, and it's because of him. It's because of his ability to make pinpoint throws, his ability to get out of trouble and make plays in a pocket. And we always talk about, man, the great ones can mask all the other stuff. C.J. Stroud is doing that. I think the Houston Texans kind of fell into a franchise quarterback that might have been even better than they thought when they were going through the draft process.
Yeah, so far so good. Right now, C.J. Stroud, the betting favorite to be Offensive Rookie of the Year. Real quick here on this upcoming class that we're about to see in 2024. How many quarterbacks do you ultimately think go in the first round? Are we talking about four, five, maybe even six quarterbacks? Is it going to be that high?
I think we always overhype it right now. There may be four or five that go, but I think it always comes down to there are two legitimate ones that I know are first-round talent, like Caleb Williams and Drake May. Michael Penix, Bo Nix, and some of the other guys that are into the conversation, they're talented enough to be taken up there, but I don't know if they're going to be that. And we always know if five are going, it only ends up being one or two that end up being legit. So those two at the top, I feel really good about. The other guys I like, but I can't say that I love them enough to say that, hey, these guys are going to be game changers that shift the league when they enter it.
Yeah, I think that's right. We need more time to evaluate. I think we're so quick to rush to the judgment and to proclaim the guy the savior. And we all know that from Brock Purdy, if they're in the right system in the right place, you know, they can certainly, you know, they look really good and people think they look better than they are. But actually, it's the system meeting the talent of the player. Which team has surprised you so far, Bucky, in the six games in the 5 weeks of the season?
Oh, man, like it's funny because I'm sitting here and I'm looking at the Indianapolis Colts win games. I'm looking at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers win game with Baker Mayfield playing like we thought he would play in terms of a high-end game manager. Those two teams have been really impressive. But I'll be honest with you, Mike. I've never been more impressed with the San Francisco 49ers than ever. In terms of, like, the sheer dominance that they play with, the way that they knocked out and dominated the Dallas Cowboys, and I don't know if Dallas was as good as people talked about, but when I look at the Niners, I kind of see a team that's on a mission. And the fact that we're having this conversation about Brock Purdy, because everyone in the league, scouts are trying to figure out what did we miss on him. I watched him at the East-West Shrine game and that stuff, but he is the right fit in the right place with the right pieces around him. Ultimately, they're going to have to pay him or figure out how to pay him. But man, the San Francisco 49ers, they look like the team that is going to roll through the league. And them and the Philadelphia Eagles having that showdown, I think it's week 13. I can't wait to see it because to me, they're the best teams. The Eagles aren't playing like that, but the Niners are clearly head and shoulders above everybody else right now.
Yeah, they're on a collision course. That game will be played in Philadelphia. Cannot wait to see that win, a rematch of last year's NFC title game. Real quick, Buck, we got about 30 seconds left. Who's the best team, in your opinion, in the AFC?
I think the Kansas City Chiefs, but I think the Kansas City Chiefs are the best team differently. Their defense is much better than we've ever seen. The young guys had an opportunity to play last year. They're playing more man coverage, and the coverage is tight. And what that has enabled them to do is play a different style on the offense. They're not the high-flying, explosive team. They're actually playing more complementary football. I think they'll be in more tighter games, but their defense can carry it. And I think what you're seeing is Andy Reid leaning to the run again. He needs to lean into it more, but they can get it done because they always have Patrick Mahomes.
All right. He is Bucky Brooks.
Great job,
check him
Bucky.
Out over
awesome
on NFL
work,
Network
appreciate
and
you.
Fox Sports. We always have a pleasure of having Bucky Brooks on here. Bucky, we appreciate it. Be well.
Hey, thanks so much. Mike, thanks for your book, man. I just got it the other day.
Oh, great. Thank you, Bucky.
Here we go. Football Done Right. Get it wherever you get your books. We will get Matt Youmans on here in studio next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Before you make your next bet, be sure to visit vsin.com. Check the current betting splits data. Want to know where the money and bets are moving every game? The betting splits page is updated with DraftKings odds every 5 minutes, so you can see changes in all the action. Find out where the public is betting based on the number of tickets or where the money doesn't match the public opinion. You can check out not just today's action, but future events as well. Betting splits are another way. VSiN is here to make you a smarter, better year-round. Check out today's betting splits for every game at vsin.com. Welcome back. It's the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe out here in downtown Las Vegas at the Circa Resort and Casino. Michael Lombardi in the great state of New Jersey, but joining us now in studio like he does each and every Saturday, it's our buddy Matt Youmans, host of VSiN Tonight. Check that out, 9 to midnight Eastern, Monday through Friday. Also the co-host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Get it wherever you get your podcast. Matt, how are we doing today here? It's a fun college football Saturday.
I don't know. I'm still trying to wake up and... Ask me in the middle of the afternoon how I'm doing. If I'm winning, I'm doing well. Yeah. If I'm not winning, I'm going to be in a bad mood. But I like a lot of games today, so I think it's going to be a good day.
You do? You like a lot of them? You like the board today, Matt, huh?
I do. Well, college football boards, there's so many opportunities on there. And I also will watch all these games and live bet the games and play halftimes. And there's nothing like college football's Saturdays. Well, college basketball Saturdays are pretty good too. But I do like the board today, Michael.
Can I ask you a question? Like I asked this to Tim Murray. Like, you like Notre Dame minus the 2 against USC because you just don't trust USC's defense?
Yeah, there's a lot of things going on here. I actually played Notre Dame minus 135 on the money line. Also laid 2.5 for a smaller bet. I wouldn't be surprised if this is a similar game to Ohio State where it comes down to the wire. And, maybe Notre Dame wins it by 1. So I'm always a little bit leery of laying points anyway. But here we go with the USC defense, which has allowed 110 points in the last 3 games to Arizona, Colorado, and Arizona State. Those are not exactly top 20 teams, okay? And on top of all that, last week, Noah Fifita, who is a backup quarterback, about 5'8", who's making his second career start, he leads Arizona to a 506 to 365 advantage in total yards, passed for 303 yards and 5 touchdowns with 1 pick, and Arizona controls the ball for 35 and a half minutes in that game. I mean, if that's not a red flag, I don't know what is. And Caleb Williams is kind of a makeup artist. You know, he does cover up a lot of the flaws on that USC team. It's some sort of in the same way that Patrick Mahomes does for the Chiefs sometimes. And I think they play with a similar style. But also, Notre Dame, I think the flat spot for the Irish was last Saturday. They had the big game at Ohio State that went to the wire. Same thing at Duke the next week. They're on the road at Louisville. That was the Cardinals Super Bowl. Jeff Brohm, big game Jeff Brohm, had the Cardinals fired up. You know, that stadium was packed. One of the biggest wins in school history. They stormed the field. I think the Irish are going to be resilient here and bounce back this week against USC. You're going to see the power running game for Notre Dame emerge a little bit, and I think they're going to push around USC's defense, control the ball, control the clock, and Sam Hartman's going to play much better than he did a week ago when he was under constant pressure. And he was sacked 5 times, picked off 3 times. You're going to see a different Notre Dame team this week. Hey, the Irish should have beat Ohio State 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, they held the Buckeyes. Notre Dame's a far superior defensive team here. And they're going to limit USC's big plays. But Notre Dame held the Buckeyes to 10 points through 59-plus minutes. So I do like Notre Dame here.
Yeah, it's a pretty impressive feat there for the Fighting Irish. That one that got away against Ohio State here. How about the game in Seattle? College game days there. A lot of hype around this game. Top 10 showdown in the Pac-12, at least for this final year of the Pac-12. Washington, a 3-point favorite. Some places going to 3.5. Total sitting at 66.5 here. What do you like in the Ducks and the Huskies, the Border War?
Oh, okay. So when I was on with Mitch and Paul on Follow the Money early in the week, I said I was playing Washington -2.5. And I bet that I did not think we would see 3.5s this week, because I really thought that the way this game was going to be bet is that if you like Washington, you're laying 2.5. If you like Oregon, you're taking that 3 right away. Well, now you can take 3.5. So if you want to take 3.5 with the Ducks, I'm not going to argue with you. The one thing I'm concerned about here is the Washington defensive front. And Oregon's going to be able to move the ball in this Huskies defense. Now, I've heard a lot of commentary this week about how Oregon's defense is a lot better than Washington's. We don't really know that, because the Ducks have played a pretty weak schedule. And the one time they went on the road to play a good opponent, Texas Tech, they gave up 30 points, and it should have been more if the quarterback, Shuck, didn't turn the ball over a couple times. So I'm not sure this is a lockdown Ducks defense. I have, Michael, a little bit more faith in Michael Penix, the quarterback for Washington, 74.7% completions, about 399 yards per game, 16 TDs, and he's really minimized the negative plays. He's only got 2 interceptions and 3 sacks, and I trust him a little bit more than I do Bo Nix on the road, who, and if you look at Bo Nix's career, he has not played anywhere near as well on the road as he does at home. So,
Matt, how about Purdue? Purdue's got Ohio State today, and I think a lot of people probably think this could be a look-ahead line for Ohio State. What are your thoughts on this one?
Well, if you've watched the Buckeyes this season, they've been a slow-starting team, too. And Femi asked me when I walked in, you think the Buckeyes would be on upset alert? I wouldn't be surprised if this is like a tie game at halftime, and you got to sweat this out. I did take 20 with Purdue. That number was over at the Golden Nugget across the street here this week. It's down to 17 here at Circa, but I think Ohio State's got reason to be a little bit concerned here. The number 2 wide receiver's out today. Ohio State struggled a lot of times with Purdue in the past. And also, you're on the road in West Lafayette, where it's going to be rainy and cold a little bit today. And Purdue's got some playmakers on offense. We talk about Deion Burks, wide receiver. Devin Mockabee, Tyrone Tracy at running back. They got good tight ends. One of the problems has been the quarterback, Hudson Card, the transfer from Texas, has turned it over too much. If he doesn't turn it over today, I think Purdue could be live to win this game. But I'll take a bunch of points, and I expect Ohio State to pick it up in the second half and come back, probably win the game, who knows, by 14, 10 to 14 points, something like that. But, you know, I do like to bet against big favorites like this when they're on the road and they have a bigger game next week, right?
Yeah.
Penn State and Ohio State next week.
And it always feels like every other year or so, Ohio State, whenever they go to Iowa or they go to Purdue, they have that one slip up. Maybe that slip up is today as a 17-point favorite. We're hanging out with Matt Youmans here, host of VSiN Tonight. Check that out Monday through Friday, 9 to midnight Eastern. Also the co-host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. Mention Notre Dame. They lost last week to Louisville. Well, the Cardinals are now laying a touchdown on the road at Pitt. Total 44. Is this a classic Narduzzi underdog spot here?
Let's hope so. I did. I took 8 with Pitt early in the week. I knew this was going to be a side that a bunch of handicappers were going to gravitate toward this week. A lot of sharp bettors. Cardinals, just like I said, they just won their Super Bowl. They're 6-0. But you can't forget, a lot of people are probably pretty impressed by watching Louisville last week against Notre Dame. That's by far the best performance for the Cardinals this season. They played their A game last week. Probably not going to do that today on the road. 2 weeks ago, Cardinals were on the road at North Carolina State. The quarterback, Jack Plummer, didn't play that well. Louisville had to squeak out a 13-10 win at NC State, which is a somewhat comparable team to Pitt. This is just a really bad spot for the Cardinals on the road after the field storming against Notre Dame. And also here, you got a Pitt team that's off a bye. Pat Narduzzi's defense statistically is solid, and you're going to make a quarterback switch too. Jurkovic has been benched. Christian Velu is a new starting quarterback. And I think maybe the Panthers are hitting a reset button here, and it's going to pay off. Now, it's not an easy bet to make because Pitt's been a mess. This is a team that's lost 4 in a row and has looked pretty bad in the process. But sometimes you got to wipe that from your memory and say, hey, I got to trust the spot here. This is a really good spot for Pitt and a really bad spot for Louisville.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, you know, I love Brahm, and I think it's even the best of coaches have a hard time getting getting their team ready to play at a game where after an emotional win like that, mm-hmm. you know, as you go forward, it's always so difficult. But today, Indiana's obviously not very good, and we see that, and they're playing Wisconsin and laying a ton of points. But you like Wisconsin today?
Wisconsin's laying 9 to Iowa. And
I'm sorry, at Iowa. I thought it was in Indiana. Indiana's like 33-point dog somewhere, right? I saw
Michigan,
that.
Michigan, yeah.
Michigan, that's right.
I actually kind of like Indiana getting all those points today, but that's not one of my favorite plays. Got a small bet on Indiana, but I did play Wisconsin here. I don't like to lay points like this. I actually hate laying points like this. But this Iowa team, oh, my God. This might be the worst 5-1 team I've ever seen in the history of college football. The quarterback, Deacon Hill, in the last two games, Deacon Hill is 17 for 48 throwing it. I don't think the Hawkeyes are going to be able to hang with the Badgers today. It's going to be an ugly game. You might not want to watch it. Look at the total, 35. Yeah. I think this is something that Wisconsin probably wins like 20-6.
Pickleball. That's what we're playing out there in Madison with the Wisconsin Badgers.
Pickleball.
Pickleball. Matt has a play in the Hawaii game for some of you get right people out there. Make sure you stick around for that. We'll reveal that on the other side, as well as the NFL card to wrap up the show here on the Lombardi Line.